40s and how she's morphed over the many different years and become an icon for the women's movement and helped shape the way women are portrayed in a lot of mass media that we use and see today.
So let's talk about the origins of Wonder Woman. So when she came about, there's really nobody else like her in comics, right? Like, she was totally new, totally groundbreaking.
Right. When comics were really popular, I want to say they became more popular right after the Depression.
Right.
And they were an escapism for the people in the Depression time. When they were originally created, they were for men, and most of them still are. However, as we started getting toward the war, women were starting to take a lot of the roles that men were doing because men were away fighting. And a gentleman named William Marsden, he got into a position to work with a comic book company, and he told them that they should maybe come up with a female character. And he was the person that came up with Wonder Woman, and she was modeled after his mother and his wife. And she had some characteristics that a lot of the male superheroes didn't have. She was compassionate, a more personable type superhero. And one of the interesting things was one of her superpowers was making people tell the truth. She had this lasso that she could wrap around you. And William Marsden actually was the person that created the lie detector machine. And so having that as one of his creations, it was maybe like a marketing ploy to have Wonder Woman have this magic lasso that could make men tell the truth. But it's interesting that that was one of her superpowers.
Yeah, it really seems like she, again, when I think about Wonder Woman and I think about comics, I think like, oh, you know, she's part of comics. She must be made as like something for men. Like, she's attractive. She's kind of something for guys to look at. But she was kind of created as this, you know, very feminine superhero who had these, like, powers that we would associate with female traits, maybe.
And actually, Mr. Marsden thought that within 100 years, women would be taking over the world. And he actually was creating her as a model for the type of woman that he thought would be in charge of society, like, 100 years later. And we know, unfortunately, women haven't quite taken over society. However, they've made quite a few inroads and changed quite a few things that need to be changed.
Right. One of the things that you've told me you found really interesting about the film was just how it gets into how Wonder Woman evolved. So she starts as this character who represents, you know, kind of this ideal of, you know, a woman who could run the world. And then she changed in some negative ways. Like, what happened? How did she evolve?
Well, one of the things, Mr. Marsden passed away in 47, right near the end of the war. And the people that took over the control of Wonder Woman started softening her up and turning her into a lady, if you will. She became like a housewife. She lost her superpowers. She became an owner of a boutique. She then went through some other changes, and she sort of started doing spy-type adventures. Also, her adventures were starting to have a more romantic flavor as opposed to that strong feminist woman flavor that they sort of started out with. Now, in the 70s, the women's movement wanted to use Wonder Woman as a strong female icon. And they realized that DC Comics had changed the persona of Wonder Woman. And so they created a campaign to get her back to the powerful woman figure that she originated as, and they were successful.
Coming into this film, I mean, what do you think you learned about comics, and what do you think you kind of learned about, you know, the rise of feminism and the changing role of women seeing this movie?
Well, one of the things, like so many bits of history I'm finding out, there are many more levels of the story than you ever get unless you are a really deep researcher. So just the history of how the character was created, the circumstances surrounding her creation, and how she evolved from a strong woman character to a weaker character back to a stronger character, and how she was influential in creating characters like Sarah Connor or some of the other stronger female characters we've seen in movies. that whole story was just so much deeper than I originally thought it was when I first heard the title, oh, Wonder Woman, the Untold Story of American Superheroines. It's actually a very deep story, and there is so much to the story.
So recap the event for us. When is it happening, and who's on the panel tonight?
This will be tonight, Tuesday, over at the Champaign Public Library, starting at 6 p.m., Professor Carol Tilley from the University Graduate School of Library and Information Sciences, Rachel Storm, the Assistant Director of the Women's Resources Center, and Kevin Hamilton, Associate Professor of Art and Design over at the university. They will be on the panel, and we will be discussing Wonder Woman, the Untold Story of American Superheroines.
All right, Henry, it's always a pleasure to have you, and thanks for putting all these together.
Thank you for having me here.
You're listening to The Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Now let's look at something called wearable technology. This innovation lets people know a lot about themselves, from their blood glucose levels to how much a person's peak REM sleep is happening to how many steps someone takes in a day. The self-tracking movement has evolved along with a bunch of new apps and devices, and advocates say it has the potential to change the way that we live and work. NPR's Elise Hugh has this report.
I'm starting my Nike Plus watch that is going to measure how far and how fast we walk using GPS and this pod that's on my shoe.
Noah Zandan measures each move he makes down to the most granular detail.
And if I show you my phone here, you can see I've got 9 different self-tracking apps. Everything from habits to running to fitness to sleep.
The 30-year-old entrepreneur is part of a growing movement known as Quantified Self, a community of self-trackers that wear devices to measure themselves constantly.
The practices of using numbers to reflect on ourselves is quite old, and it's when these established practices meet these new technologies that you get the quantified self.
Former Wired editor Gary Wolf started the quantified self community in 2008.
What's new are some of the technological tools, the cloud analytics, the small sensor technologies, the computing that's coming very close to us and is in our phones.
Devices you can now carry or wear make it possible to measure how much REM sleep you get each night, your peak productivity time at work, what goes in your body, and what comes out.
So there's a guy in California that's been tracking his poop for the last year, and he actually was able to diagnose himself with Crohn's disease before his doctors because of tracking his stool sample for the last year.
Most people aren't monitoring themselves that closely, but more Americans say they're self-tracking. 14% of respondents in the 2012 Pew Research Survey on Internet in the American Life said they used websites, a computer program, or an app to track their health. That's more health trackers than there are Twitter users.
It's hard to establish new habits, right? But you can't even get there if you don't have anything quantified to work with.
Sunny Vu's company created the first blood glucose meter for mobile phones. Makers like Vu say the movement is spawning a whole new industry of companies that want to teach users what to do with their data.
But what I think is going to happen and is happening is you have a number of these apps and web services that are using artificial intelligence, using crowdsourcing information, using experts to deliver personalized health coaching, fitness coaching, or whatnot. And on the medical side, decision support services for patients and care providers. This will be a new industry, automated coaching, automated decision support.
Noah says the constant feedback has changed the way he lives and maybe how long he will live.
And I actually have an app on here that will tell me when I'm going to die and tell me how long I'm going to live based on my daily habits. And if I improve my habits, which it sends me an email every day with what habit I should improve, like drink more water, I can see my life expectancy increase on my iPhone.
Just knowing details about ourselves doesn't always translate to better living. If it did, bathroom scales would have done more for those with weight problems. But devoted self-trackers say the end goal isn't necessarily changing themselves, but knowing themselves.
It's not just give me the data so I can improve, it's give me the data so I can understand.
Paving a way to better understanding, one carefully counted step at a time. Elise Hugh, NPR News, Austin.
McKinley Church and Foundation congratulates the winners of the Foundation's 2013 Social Justice Awards. U of I student Nicole Beck, public educator Dr. Laura Taylor, student organization La Colectiva, and community organization Champaign County Healthcare Consumers. Read more about their good work at www.mckinley-church.org.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 12th of March, 2013. It was on this day, 1987, the musical Les Miserables opened on Broadway based on the novel by Victor Hugo. It was the French songwriter Alain Boublia who got the idea to produce it. He shared his idea with the composer Claude-Michel Schomberge. The 1980 Paris production was a success. It opened in London in 1985 and then in New York on this day in 1987. It ran for 16 years. The London show has never stopped. It's now the world's longest-running musical. It's the birthday of the children's author Virginia Hamilton, 1934, born near Yellow Springs, Ohio. Wrote 41 books for children and young adults, including M.C. Higgins the Great. Virginia Hamilton, who said, "There are three things I can remember always wanting: to go to New York, to go to Spain, and to be a writer. It feels nice to have done all three. I haven't had to want anything for some time." It's the birthday of the poet Naomi Shihab Nye, born 1952 in St. Louis, author of nearly 30 books of poems, also fiction for children and young adults. And it's the birthday of Dave Eggers, born Boston, 1970, grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. He was a student at the University of Illinois when both his parents died of cancer in 1991. And he dropped out of college, moved to California with his 8-year-old brother, Christopher, set out to raise him, made his living as a writer and a graphic designer, and described the experience in his book, A Heartbreaking Work of Staggering Genius, which was a huge success when it came out in 2000. Here's a poem by Marjorie Sazer, "My Old Aunts Play Canasta in a Snowstorm." I ride along in the back seat. The aunt who can drive picks up each sister at her door, keeps the Pontiac chugging in each driveway, while one or the other slips into her overshoes and steps out, closing her door with a click, the wind lifting the fringe of her white cotton scarf as she comes down the sidewalk, still pulling on her new polyester Christmas stocking mittens. "We have no business to be out in such a storm," she says. "No business at all." The wind takes her voice and swirls it like snow across the windshield.